Welcome to Hype, episode 192. My name is Selena. I'm back with Pam for what is our final pre-Comic-Con 2018 podcast. We didn't quite make 200, but we tried. 92 is pretty good. We're fairly close. How are you doing, Pam?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I think we're both feeling the pre-Comic-Con stress now at this point.
I know. There's so many things I need to do. Do you get, like, anxious about packing?
Not packing. Just, okay. Like, figuring out all the stuff I'm supposed to do. Like, making my plan for the trip.
Oh, yeah. I feel like that will, like, that's semi out of our control, like a little insider baseball for you guys. We get to express interest in things, but ultimately it's like the powers that be at Hypeable that end up assigning our schedule and like RSVPing on our behalf and stuff like that. So like Selena alluded to, sometimes we don't know what we're doing until like right before we get there, which is really stressful. But then meanwhile, I'm just like, is it going to be hot? Is it going to be cold? Like, what do I need to pack? Do I need a jacket? Is it going to rain? One year it rained. I wasn't there, but I heard tell.
What? That's wild. But we'll be inside for most of the time. So I don't think you need to worry that much about
that. That's true.
Yeah, we have no idea really what we're doing yet at Comic-Con, but we'll keep you guys posted. I'm sure we'll figure out some fun stuff to do around there. And one of the things we're actually doing at Comic-Con is we are putting together packs of goodies for the winners of our competition that we talked about last week, which is we're pulling three names from the listeners, and two of them will be from our Patreon, which is patreon.com/hypepodcast, and one of them will be out of everyone, so everyone can participate in that one. And we will be gathering some goodies and fun stuff for the winners at Comic-Con, so Pam will give you the details of how to enter.
Yes, I think we jumped the gun on this, and then I realized that I am technologically adept when it comes to certain things, but we're going to be using Rafflecopter. If you don't know what that is, that's okay. You definitely will. It's going to be super straightforward when you see it. So you're going to look for an embed in the show notes for this episode on Hypeable.com, and we're also going to tweet it out. So if you follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/hypeablehype, you'll see it there too. And you're going to have like certain options for how to enter. So you can either like follow the podcast on Twitter, and if you already do that, you'll just like verify that you do and you'll get entered. Or I think we'll give you the option as well if you want to tweet about our show, and then that'll count as an entry as well. So yeah, that's basically how it's going to work. Like I said, it's going to be super straightforward once you see it. Everybody will have an opportunity to enter for like one of the prize bags. And then the other two, like Selena said, will be exclusive to our lovely patrons as a thank you for supporting the show. And we're going to keep it open until next week on Tuesday, because that'll be the day before Comic-Con officially starts. And then that way we'll know who's getting what. And Selena and I can maybe try and customize the bags a little bit, maybe.
Yes,
for
maybe.
Whoever wins. So yeah, it's I'm really excited to do this because we've been, you know, wanting to provide giveaways for you guys for a while, because we really appreciate that you guys listen in every week and that you support the show in any way you can, even if that means that you're active on Twitter and you write in and let us know what you think, or if you subscribe to our Patreon, like regardless of how you choose to support, your support means a lot. And so we're excited to give back to you guys kind of by doing this. So hopefully you guys are excited, and we're looking forward to curating these little grab bags from Comic-Con. So you'll have a little piece of the convention, even if you can't go.
Absolutely. This is very exciting. As Pam said, that information will be available in the post on hypeable.com. HYPABLE.com for Hype 192. And we will also be giving information about that on our Twitter, which is twitter.com/hypepod. I never say it that way. It's at HypeableHype on Twitter. You can also, if you want to follow us, you can also follow us on Instagram at HypeableHype and on Tumblr, which is hypepodcast.tumblr.com. If you want to send us feedback for what we talk about this week or any recs you have for us or anything like that, you can tweet us at HypeableHype or send us an email, which is hype@hypeable.com. And we have some really fun emails to get into later in the show, including some Shadowhunters emails. So if you guys are listening to this, anyone who found this podcast because we started talking about Shadowhunters, then hello and welcome. And actually, even though it's not officially in the news lineup this week, I do want to talk a little bit about Shadowhunters this week as well, because there might be hope for Shadowhunters after all. Aww. I'm very excited. For all of like the month that I've been a fan, I've been very anxious about its cancellation. So now that there's actually like potentially some chance of it being picked up, I'm like, oh my god, because I honestly did not have much hope. Anyway, we'll get to that in the news. All right, so but as always, we start with how we hype, where we tell you what we've been doing in fandom this past week. What have you been doing, Pam? Oh wait, no, take what? It back. I want to say in our Patreon, I forgot to plug our Patreon. I always do that. On Patreon, which is patreon.com/hypepodcast, where you can subscribe for $2 a month. We also do a weekly bonus segment that isn't on this main show that you can go listen to there. And this week's bonus segment will be a review of Ant-Man 2, The Wasp. And The Wasp, as I like to call it. So head on over to patreon.com/hypepodcast and consider supporting us over there. That's it. Okay, how we hype. You go.
Okay. Well, the main thing I did this week was see Ant-Man and the Wasp, which I know is Selena's new favorite movie. We're going to talk about that later. But I also have seen in the past few weeks a few documentaries. The first one is Won't You Be My Neighbor, which is the Mr. Rogers documentary. We talked about it a few months ago when the trailer came out. Mr. Rogers is, as we discussed when the trailer debuted, something that's very kind of unique to America, although I'm sure there are some people overseas that, you know, also grew up with Mr. Rogers, but, you know, Selena specifically said she hadn't really heard of him before. And he was just this very kind soul that dedicated his life to helping children develop. And if you're a fan of Mr. Rogers or you grew up with him, we're obviously living in the age of nostalgia, then I think that this is the documentary for you. It's really heartwarming and you really learn a lot about who he was as a person and kind of how this phenomenon on, you know, the public broadcasting network kind of came to fruition. And so it was really nice to kind of take a peek into his life and kind of really understand how this iconic show was developed. And the filmmaker is also the man behind another one of my favorite documentaries that came out just a few years ago called 20 Feet from Stardom, which focused on the history of backup singers through music history. And so he just does really great work. And I recommend both of those. Very highly recommend both of those. And then speaking of music documentaries, I also saw Believer, which premiered on HBO, I think it was last week or the week before. This is a documentary by Imagine Dragons frontman Dan Reynolds, and in it he explores how the Mormon Church treats LGBTQ members and kind of goes on a mission to understand that and try and figure out how maybe he can change the perception of that. And it was really moving and super compelling, especially considering, you know, he's from Utah himself, and he explores the high suicide rate amongst teens in that state specifically and how it relates to the Mormon Church, which notoriously shuns people that identify as LGBTQIA. So it's really heavy, but really worth watching. So that's on HBO if you're interested, and it's called Believer, named after the single. You're an Imagine Dragons fan.
I am, yes. I went to a concert with them.
Yeah. So he uses his platform, because Imagine Dragons is like huge, to kind of amplify what he's trying to preach, which is tolerance among people that are also Mormon like him. And I just think that that's really great that he sees the opportunity to do this, even though it's kind of scary to speak out when you belong to the Mormon Church, because, you know, there's obviously the possibility that he could be excommunicated from his family and from his community, but, you know, he's doing it to help other people. So yeah. I think it's really cool, and it's a great watch. So
My How We Hype is a book recommendation. I'm not totally done with it yet, but I do want to recommend it before it gets lost in the shuffle of Comic-Con. So this is actually, I'm reading or listening to the audiobook of this, and it was recommended to me by a friend from The 100. my friend BA, who is working on the 100, she recommended this book to me called Year One, by Nora Roberts. Obviously, Nora Roberts, everyone knows she's written like a million books, like over 200 books, I think. But this one is particularly exciting, maybe even to fans of The 100. It's about the end of the world, basically. You know, there's a plague or a virus that takes out most of the world's population, and whoever remains are either immune to the virus or they're like, quote unquote, uncanny. So they have some kind of special magical abilities. And so this, like the title kind of indicates, this book chronicles the first year of this outbreak and the fallout. And it is extremely well written and explained. Like, I was really sort of impressed by how real it feels and how much you sense the decay of the world, you know, as a result of all the death and all the chaos that ensues. And the characters are really compelling, and you feel them. You follow a group of different people as they make their way through this world, and I'm not going to like spoil what happens, but it all kind of ties together in a really, really neat way. And it's the first in a series, and I'm like a little bit mad that it was recommended to me now, because the second one doesn't come out until December. It's called Of Blood and Bone. The series is called Chronicles of the One, and Year One was the first one in the series. And oh my God, I really, really, really like this book, and I really like the audiobook. My one issue with the audiobook is that her men, the narrator, the men kind of sound like old, like, like they all sound like that. Like, she does that voice for them, and it's really, like, really distracting.
That's really great.
Well, thank you, Pam.
It was better when I couldn't understand the words. More authentic.
But yeah, no, like, it also kind of makes me distrust all the men in the book, which obviously, like, you don't have to, so don't worry about that. But her female voices are great, and the book is really, really good. So Year One by Nora Roberts. I have a few chapters left, but I'm practically done with it. So I'm really intrigued with the sequel too already. So yeah, that's my recommendation. And we're going to move into the news now, where we have a bunch of stories to talk about. We're going to kick it off with Star Wars this week. We have a few really cool, I think, maybe one a little bit more cool than the other one, but I guess it depends who you ask. Casting announcement for episode 9, the final chapter of this current saga. We learned last week, I believe, that Kerry Russell, who of course recently graduated from The Americans, is coming back to the J.J. Abrams universe. The two of them famously worked together on Felicity, and now she is joining, reportedly joining episode 9, which Abrams is directing, in a still unknown role. And everyone's like, she's Rey's mom, because she's, you know, has brown hair. But I mean, she could be Rey's mom, you never know. And anyway, it is kind of funny, like, aside from the fact that Kerry Russell is great and we're excited to see another woman in this film, it does kind of continue that really hilarious and weird pattern that Star Wars has of always casting, like, primarily, like, brunette women in the roles, which is, like, it's so funny. I mean, I know there have been some exceptions recently, but still, like, by and large, this is, like, the model of woman that Star Wars casts, and it's weird. But anyway, Kerry Russell's great.
Yeah, I mean, I've thought about this a lot, and the only thing I can think of is that they're trying to make their women seem more quote-unquote girl next door. Yeah. You know, because, like, you think of how, like the stereotypical way women are, you know, described sometimes. It's like, she was plain with brown hair.
Right.
Brown eyes.
Mousy brown hair. And yeah.
Like the Bella from Twilight. Like,
yes.
There was nothing spectacular about her except, like, they're extraordinarily beautiful.
Yeah. Perhaps, perhaps. Do you think it's Ray's mom?
I mean, like, if it would make sense, they would be like, well, she has to have brown hair because she has to look like Ray. I don't know. That's a good question.
I mean, it's interesting. It's just, I find it so funny. I find the whole Star Wars thing so hilarious. Like, how people are so like, she can't be Ray's mom. And other people are like, she has to be.
Is it important for
the revelation? I guess. If you think it's important, it's important.
I don't know. But, like, yeah. I mean, again, yeah, you're right. I mean, like, it's not, we won't know if it's important until they show us how it's important in the grand scheme of the plot. But like, I don't know. I just kind of feel like, especially in the last one, they spend a large bulk of it trying to dissuade her from like looking to the past and just moving forward. But bringing her mom into it is literally just like going to propel her further into the past.
Yeah.
So what was the point, you know?
Yeah, good point. Maybe she's Obi-Wan's daughter.
Ooh, I'll sign up for that fanfic.
I know. Anyway, Carrie Russell is not the only one who's been cast because this is really exciting. Billy Dee Williams is reprising his role as Lando Calrissian in Star Wars Episode 9. I think like a lot of signs have been pointing to this. You know, Lando was really popular in Solo, which in a lot of ways felt like it was both like an origin story for Han Solo and for Lando. And I think also as well, and I hope this is true, and I remember we talked about this back when Carrie Fisher passed away, that there was kind of a void in the final film for which kind of original cast member was going to step up, because the plan originally had been for Force Awakens to be Han's movie and Jedi to be Luke's movie and the final one to be Leia's movie, which obviously was horrific and tragic that it panned out that way. But if they bring in, not only is it great to see Billy Dee Williams back as Lando, but it would be so great if they gave him some kind of part, like beyond sort of like a glorified cameo, even though he's like 90 years old. The actor is super old, but like really great like of him to come back for this. But I really, really hope that it ends up being some kind of really significant part, and that he ends up playing like a, being like a part of the puzzle that maybe Leia should have been, you know?
Yeah, I think that would be really nice, because I don't know. I don't know if like the plan was always to bring him back, or he's, like you said, filling the void. But yeah. I do kind of also feel like, unfortunately, like, obviously it would be wonderful to have Carrie still here with us, but if her absence kind of allows for Lando to be brought back in a way where he has a little bit more to do, that's kind of really nice for him as a character, you know?
Yeah.
And also more opportunity for us to, like, learn a little bit more about him, because while Lando Calrissian is a fan favorite, we don't know too much about him, you know? And it would be nice to know, like, obviously we're not going backwards, which is what a lot of people, I think, we got a little taste of it with Donald Glover's portrayal in Solo. But it would just be really nice to know what he's doing going forward. It would be nice to get that reconciliation, obviously, with him coming to terms with the fact that Han is no longer there.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the Millennium Falcon still lives on. And that's, like, a huge part of his history, too. So there's definitely a lot for them to play with there.
I know. Yeah, I know. I'm really stoked he's back. And even if it's just a small role, like, we'll still appreciate it. But yeah, I hope that they have a really unique opportunity to build on that and to bring Lando in. It would kind of be like, when you go back and you watch all the movies, I think obviously having Leia be like the key to the trilogy, as I think she was meant to, would have been really beautiful. And I hope we find out what it was supposed to be. Like, I still hope they tell us at some point. But it would be, I think, like, looking back over the whole thing, if it does end up being Lando that somehow maybe, like, connects. I don't know, like, if he has some kind of connection to, Kylo Ren, or if he has anything that he can, like, offer that will, like, turn the tide of the war. And that you can go back and see, oh my God, it's that guy. You know, it's Lando from the fifth one or whatever. So, yeah, I'm really excited.
Me too. Well, here's a movie that I'm also equally excited about. I keep forgetting this is coming out at the tail end of the summer, but
I thought it already had premiered.
I know. It's so weird. Well, we've been talking about it for a while. Disney is set to release their live-action Winnie the Pooh, Christopher Robin, which of course stars Ewan McGregor as an adult Christopher. And the trailers for this just keep warming the cockles of my heart. They're just, like, so cute. And I grew up watching Winnie the Pooh. And I feel like every time I see, like, more of this movie, it just makes me smile. And I'm so excited to check it out in theaters. And if you're excited, too, then you will not want to miss this new sneak peek at the movie. Just more adorable interactions between adult Christopher and the old 100-acre wood gang. There's a really cute scene of Pooh and Christopher Robin on the train. And it's just, I don't know. Is there something about the way Disney like presents the idea of childlike wonderment that just, they just hit the nail on the head. And this is kind of what that does. And it's really great. And I'm so excited to check this out in August.
Yeah. I put this one, I don't know why, I don't feel like this deserves the top spot in the doc, even though we usually put like Harry Potter related stuff there. This one can be number three. So we have a little bit of news about Grindelwald in the upcoming Fantastic Beasts and the Crimes of Grindelwald film. David Heyman, who is not the best when it comes to talking to press, I feel like here, his comments always tend to offend in one way or another. This time, I mean, it's fairly innocuous what he said, but it's still pretty funny that he has claimed that Grindelwald is a scarier villain than Voldemort. And his rationale is kind of because Grindelwald, you know, he said that Voldemort was like fire and fury, which is also kind of interesting turn of phrase. But he says Grindelwald is a scarier villain because he's very persuasive. One can see the rationale in his arguments, which doesn't mean his methodology is right. I read a comment on Twitter about this saying that like you can absolutely believe that this would be the case looking at the books. But the problem, of course, as we've kind of talked about at length before, is that Johnny Depp and the way that they're presenting Johnny Depp in the film, I really don't know if they honestly think that he is charismatic. Like I almost cannot bring myself to believe that they're that sort of tone deaf in seeing Depp as Grindelwald on screen and thinking, oh yeah, this guy can like persuade people to his side. Like what the like Colin Farrell's Grindelwald, sure. But this like clownish, like Willy Wonka Grindelwald, like, no, I absolutely do not see that. So that was like my first comment. And my second comment was just like, when you talk about things like being persuasive and having like it's like he describes it as like a political thriller and like he can sway people to his side. And I'm almost like, yeah, but we like literally just saw this in Black Panther. You know, like, are they just trying to pull a Killmonger because that they're not going to pull it off, you know? So I don't know. I'm feeling maybe a little too skeptical, but
that's also like very different because Killmonger, you can understand where he's coming from. But Grindelwald and what he stands for.
But I guess what he's saying is that you will be able to understand where he's coming from. Maybe. Like he will be, you can see the rationale in his arguments. Yeah. He's kind of saying, oh, well, he's going to try to like open Wizarding World up to the world, which is basically what Killmonger wanted to do with Wakanda, right? So it is like I just thought it was like a similar story structure. But I guess like the point like of Grindelwald being a more charismatic, persuasive villain is that he is going to be more like the leaders of history that were manipulative and sort of spouted an ideology as opposed to the leaders that just kind of plowed ahead with brute force. I don't know. Do you think Grindelwald's going to be able to persuade the audience to see his side?
I think it depends on how Johnny Depp delivers the performance, honestly.
Right.
I think that you can definitely, like you said, you can see the manipulation in Colin Farrell, but it's like manipulation in its pure form, especially when you look at the relationship he had with Credence, where it was like praise, 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 and then dependency after, you know, emotional abuse. I don't know how you do that on a grander scale, but I guess we'll see. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like he's like the quintessential abusive boyfriend.
Yes. Yeah. I guess we will see. I have, you know, I feel like we've kind of been led to believe that at least Newt's brother will be swayed to Grindelwald's side, and potentially also Queenie and Jacob, even though I find that hard to see, even though Grindelwald might be able to sway them by saying like, oh, you know, your romance would not be allowed in the wizarding world, but I wouldn't care, or something dumb like that.
Right. I think I just like just to backtrack a bit, I just have, I don't know. I guess like when it's hard because reading the books, and obviously this is different and it could be different. You know, we've always made a literary comparison between what Grindelwald was trying to do to like World War II and the rise of like Nazism and Adolf Hitler and stuff like that, you know, and obviously a lot of people were swayed back then to join his side and fed into the idea that like, yes, like they were the better race, you know? And so I can definitely see how in the grand scheme of things, like wizards would believe that, you know, in this era, in the wizarding world. Yeah. But as an audience, I think that that's harder to sell.
Yeah.
You know, to an audience of 2018. You know, I think that you can tell the story and it makes sense for those people to believe. But in contrast, like what Eric Killmonger does, like the rationale, like you understand the rationale more than you understand, like, say, like Hitler's rationale in Nazi Germany. Yeah, do you know what I mean?
That's what I meant.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was trying to say when I said that I can't compare the two logics, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's like what I meant. Like, they're going to try to pull off a similar, like, he's making really rational arguments. Look how sensible this is. Are we sure we're on the hero side? And we're going to be, like you said, yeah, but it doesn't work because we can like see right through it. Like, not only is Depp not very charismatic, but like what he's saying is not actually going to hold the same sway as like it did in that film. I just find it interesting because the two films, like if you break it down like that, they kind of have a similar plot, and it sounds like their villains are going to like be working similar, like manipulative, my truth might be the correct truth kind of angles, but obviously the big difference is that it's not going to, I don't think it's going to work with Grindelwald.
I think that's also the trend right now in movies, because if you look at like Avengers Infinity War, Thanos is very similar, you know?
Good point, yeah.
So, and I then like is, we'll get actually, into it, but yeah. Ant-Man and the Wasp is also kind of like the sympathetic villain.
You're right. One thing I did want to note that is interesting, I actually did find interesting, is that Heyman makes a point that Dumbledore is also a master manipulator. You know, he manipulated Harry.
And well, that is like no secret to book readers. I feel like a lot of people harbor a lot of animosity towards Dumbledore, but
for sure, but I think that's going to be really interesting, because that might also in the film sort of play into like it's not just Grindelwald trying to manipulate people, it's also Dumbledore. So that might be fun, because then it's like you're stuck with Newt in the middle going like, oh, am I being pushed from both sides? Like, where am I supposed to go? Like, what is this about? So yeah. It might be interesting from that.
I think also like it'll be like, again, I feel like every time we talk about Fantastic Beasts, like our focus is on Dumbledore because he is like the most intriguing character.
Yes.
I think it's one thing to come to the realization that Dumbledore is an old man as a master manipulator, just because of the way that like in the books he's so soft spoken, you know, until he needs to raise his voice. But as a young man, that's not really the case. He's got more spunk, you know?
Yeah.
So I am kind of curious to see how that plays out as well. It'll be probably much closer to like the Gambin feisty Dumbledore that we got in the last few movies, but
I don't know. Anyway, it's fun. I am kind of excited, like against my will. So we'll see. We'll see in November. A new trailer is apparently debuting on Saturday, probably when I'm busy doing other stuff.
Oh, on Saturday at Comic-Con?
Yeah.
Oh, are they doing it at the WB panel?
I guess, yeah.
Interesting. All right. Well, keep an eye on Hypebull for that. Last year, I was in the press room. Not last year. Yeah, it was last year. I don't know. Like last year, the year before, I was in the press room during the Harry Potter, like the Fantastic Beasts presentation, and you could hear the trailer like rumbling up because it's right above Hall H, the press room.
Oh my God.
And it was so funny because I was like, wait, I know these sounds. And like, you couldn't make it out, but like, I knew it was Fantastic Beasts. Oh man, it was so funny.
Oh.
Well, we're going to switch over to some TV news, starting with some developments over at Netflix. We finally have our first promotional poster for the upcoming Riverdale spinoff, The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, which is, of course, the mm-hmm. Sabrina the Teenage Witch adaptation. This poster is super minimalistic, but I'm kind of really into it. It's black, white, and red, and we don't see any of like the actual cast members in the poster. It's just an outline of Sabrina's blonde bob, which is the same one that she has in the comic book illustrations in the comics that the adaptation, in the comics that the TV show is based off of. So she's also got the headband from there. And then we haven't really heard very much about this, but of course, in the 90s family sitcom, Sabrina had her trusty cat Salem. And there's not going to be a talking cat in this iteration, but they're definitely teasing Salem in the poster because his silhouette is right at the center of her face. So I think that's really cool.
I know. I think it's so too. I think it looks really cool.
Mm-hmm. So there's not much else here, but it's just like a little taste of something to get you excited. I was really hoping that we get more information leading up to Comic-Con. We don't have mm-hmm. an official premiere date or anything like that yet, but I feel like now that the cast has finished, it sounds like preliminary filming, because a lot of them are talking about doing ADR and stuff like that over on Instagram. I've been like following them through Instagram stories and stuff like that. I feel like it's not long until we're going to get a trailer or like more information on a release date. For now, the poster just says coming soon, but
yeah,
I feel like we've got to be getting more now, especially since they're like in the thick of filming.
You know what I would do if I was Netflix? And they might not need to do this, but if I was Netflix, I would embed trailers for new Netflix shows in other Netflix shows. So say like Anne with an E just premiered, right? So I would put the Sabrina trailer at like the end of the first episode of Anne with an E, because then I would like, people would have to watch it to like see it, right? So you would get more, or at least they would have to click on the episode and like perhaps get intrigued. So it would be like in the movies where they put trailers before like similar movies.
I mean, it could happen. This past year, this past season on Riverdale, they had an episode where they went to the movies and the characters were going to see Love, Simon.
Oh my God.
Which like makes sense, of course, because Greg Berlanti, who did Love, Simon, also does a slew of CW mm-hmm. shows, including Supergirl. So he's got a pretty good relationship really with the network already. And yeah, they showed a whole like scene that had not yet premiered in Riverdale while like Riverdale characters were watching it. It was super meta.
Yes. I totally agree.
So we have a little bit more Netflix news. This is a little bit more, it kind of, this is not like really entertainment based, but, and it's not going to affect you unless you opt in. But basically what's going on is that Netflix is testing a new, more expensive Ultra plan. If you opt in, it'll be $16.99 a month versus the $13.99 a month, which is the normal plan that most people pay for. And the difference is that you will get 4 Ultra HD streams via the new multi-plan, if that's something that is of interest to you. Currently, everybody gets 2 Ultra HD streams, so you'd be upping that number to 4. This kind of sounds like it's something that's going to be of interest to people that are like really specific on how they like to view things on their screens. I can't see myself opting into this, but if, you know, Ultra HD streams are very important to you, then, you know, getting a clearer picture on some bigger movie releases and maybe it might be worth to stream in Ultra HD, this might be something for you. You know, maybe like some of the bigger blockbusters, mm-hmm. I could see this making a difference if you have like a really, really fancy like 4K television at home. I don't have that, but it's definitely interesting that they're thinking, or they are like planning to introduce this for sure, because it kind of makes me wonder if they're looking at upping the quality of, you know, maybe some Netflix originals that are coming down the pipeline.
Yeah, like first of all, just in terms of like filming quality and stuff, that's really exciting. I'm honestly just really excited that this is going to be based on quality and not on content, you know, mm-hmm. because any like sort of tier level of subscription has me really worried, because in the end it's going to be like Netflix basic where you can only watch Netflix exclusives and, you know, it's going to pile on. But, and obviously I hope that the quality of Netflix as it is now won't suffer in comparison, because I think Netflix has really, really great streaming quality right now. So, but this is really cool. I mean, it's going to be a good incentive for those people who do have those ultra 4K giant televisions in their homes, which I do not. I just watch on a tiny computer screen.
Same here most of the time. Yeah. But so, yeah, but you're right, because when I first read this headline, I was actually kind of worried that they were talking about, you know, faster streaming, which might affect some people that live in more rural areas. Like maybe you can't get like super, super high speed internet. And it would really suck if that meant that they were going to like slow down if you like binge too much. You know how kind of like mobile data plans will slow down your service if you go over a certain amount. Like I was really worried. So after actually reading the story and just seeing it was like an extra you could opt in for if it was something that mattered to you, it's kind of like, that's really nice, Netflix, because it's not like they can add or take away commercials because they don't do that.
Right, exactly, so. Yeah. Okay, so we have a couple of more news stories now. The first one is just an update on Game of Thrones. No, it's still not coming out until 2019, but they finished filming. Like, Game of Thrones is officially finished filming, which is very emotional, even though it doesn't technically matter to us. And a couple of cast members, you know, they've been sharing little things on social media and stuff like that. And Sophie Turner, who plays Sansa Stark, a contender for the throne, by the way, she gave a short interview when she said that she was satisfied with how it ended. She said, people have come up with so many fan theories about how it's going to end and who will end up where and who will end up with who. It really is so unpredictable the way that it ends up. I'm very satisfied with that. And I think the fans will be satisfied with that too. So obviously Sophie Turner saying it's unpredictable is really interesting, because I'm sure that some fans have figured it out. Like, I'm sure there's no possible logical ending that hasn't been theorized about. But the interesting thing, of course, about the ending of Game of Thrones is that it's very likely going to be different than the ending of A Song of Ice and Fire. So whoever Martin sort of imagined would sit on the throne in the end, if there even is a throne, like, his end game probably won't be the show end game. So in that sense, I guess, like, it will be very unpredictable, because the most logical ending will not be the show ending. And I'm really excited. I'm really sort of, I hope they just don't all die, because I feel like that would actually be the most predictable sort of, oh, well, the story's over, they're all dead, haha. But I hope it ends up with, like, I would like Sansa on the throne, or I guess Daenerys won't end up on the throne if it's unpredictable, because that would be unpredictable too. But I would like that anyway. I'm cool. I'm glad she's happy with it. I guess she wouldn't say if she thought it sucked, but.
Right, right. Or maybe, well, she probably will later, you know?
Yeah.
I know. Did you see that Maisie Williams posted about finishing, like, wrapping on the series?
Yeah, and she posted something like final, like, wolf standing.
Yeah, like, stirred up those rumors. I mean, I would love it if Arya was the last woman standing. How funny would that be? But it's kind of like, it's bittersweet. It's the end of a very long journey, and we still don't know when we're going to get it, but I'm really excited to tune in.
I am excited as well. 11. What? It's 2019 at some point. Maybe May. We don't know. All right. So as promised, the final little addition to the news doc is about Shadowhunters, because just now, like an hour ago, we actually had an update, which is not as bad news as I feared. I actually, even though I started watching it like it a month ago after it had already been canceled, I didn't have that much hope for Shadowhunters, because despite its really massive fan presence online, and obviously like this franchise is huge. And now that I've seen the show, I can actually attest to the fact that it's very, very good. I don't know. It felt like one of those shows that was almost canceled out of spite, you know, like there was no real reason to cancel it. Kind of like The Expanse when they canceled that. But I didn't see, I feel like the window for shows being saved has kind of closed. But it seems like there might be some options left on the table, hopefully partially because of the hashtag Save Shadowhunters campaign, which had that big billboard in Times Square, which was like amazing. And producer Martin Moskowitz has spoken to Deadline and confirmed that discussions to save the show are ongoing. And they're talking to Constantine Film and other partners, new and old. But the kind of the roadblock is that the series requires support from both the U.S. and abroad. He does say that the production company is really amazed by the dedication and persistence of the campaign. And, you know, they're talking to Netflix as well, which is good news. Like, Netflix has kind of come out and said that they're, like, done with saving shows. But that might not be entirely true. There might still be some hope there. I feel like it would be such a good fit on Netflix. So I really, really hope that this kicks up. And I would say, like, the Shadowhunters campaign, like, they're so good. They're so good at being active and doing things and really, really fighting. And those physical efforts, like the there was like a banner flying over Netflix and there was a billboard in Times Square and stuff like that. Just being visible and being organized and stuff. I think it works. I think they should keep doing it. I think what NBC did with Timeless was they kind of allowed for the hype to die down a little bit and then they canceled it. But so maybe Shadowhunters, like maybe if the hype doesn't die down, then it stands a chance, at least for like a little wrap-up season, you know? I have hope. Even though apparently they are planning kind of an ending, you know, like a proper ending.
Well, I think that, God, it sucks because anytime you have a passionate fan base that, you know, tries so hard and then it just, like, it's not the right time for the show to get saved. It just really sucks when it doesn't work out. And they've done, like you said, some amazing things to really kind of show people that there's an audience for the show that will watch and tune in and make it worth whoever decides to pick it up's while. But mm-hmm. it's also kind of comforting, I'm sure, to know that they're figuring out how to wrap things up if in the event that, you know, nobody wants to pick it up.
Yeah. Yeah. God, crossing fingers. Anyway, that was just a little update for you guys. Moving on to TV show of the week. Pam, oh my God, no spoilers. We have to like mutually agree to no spoilers on our shows this week because I still haven't watched it.
Oh my God. Yes. Do you want me to go first or did you want to go first?
Yes, please.
Okay. So Anne with an E, our favorite feel good show, is officially back on Netflix. I like friendship over to everybody that I know that knew that this show was coming back on July 6th because I had no idea.
I only found out like earlier that week.
Yeah. Like, I don't
really
know.
It's strange. This came out of nowhere.
I know. I don't know if like Netflix just didn't tell anybody or what, but I kind of feel a little slighted and a little betrayed, but it's okay because, you know, I've already watched the full second season. Oh my God, this show is so good. For any of you guys that don't know, Anne with an E is Netflix's adaptation of Anne of Green Gables, and it's so charming and so lovely. And season two had a lot of twists and turns. I never read Anne of Green Gables, and I know just from like eavesdropping in on conversations people are having via Twitter that it's not like a true to the book adaptation. But besides that, everybody kind of seems to be in agreement that they really appreciate what they're doing. Like, the things that they're doing differently, they kind of appreciate what they add to the layers of this story. And season two, I think, really took me for a loop because obviously this is a period piece, you know, it doesn't take place in present day. But a lot of the things that they bring up, subject matters in terms of, like, episodes and ongoing character arcs are very relevant to things that we're discussing today. So it's just, I don't know how much you know, how much you've seen on Twitter, but just like some of the plot themes that they brought up this season were really surprising, but worked really well. And I just love that they took that risk, because it's really easy when you do period pieces to kind of say like, oh, well, like this would have never happened in the 1800s, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know anything, luckily. Like, I've remained totally spoiler free, but I'm really excited to see like where it goes. I just remember that season one cliffhanger was like terrifying. Like, that was really, really, really sinister. So I'm super worried about the second season. I have no idea where it's gonna go, but I'm like really scared to watch it. But I'm also really excited because it was really, really lovely the first season.
Yes, I'm so excited for you to tune in and excited to hear what you think whenever you do.
Yes. Yeah. Okay, so I just want to touch base with the 100 real quick. Pam hasn't caught up, so I won't like be too specific. And also, like, you guys, some of you might not have caught up, so you might not want spoilers. But the ninth episode of the season just aired, Six Semper Tyrannis, Thus Always to Tyrants. And it was very exciting and it was very intense. Like, I want you guys all to know that there's no more breaks now. So there will be like an episode of The 100 every week now for 4 weeks, and then the season is over and it will air on at 8/7 Central. So it's been moved an hour forward on Tuesdays at the CW. So it's like the season, there's just four more episodes to go and then the season is over. It's gone by so fast. But yeah, this episode, I feel like it brought a lot of developments that had been in the works for a long time. I think in many ways the season has, I don't want to say predictable, but it's kind of followed some beats that make a lot of sense, so that when, obviously you never know what's going to happen at the start of a season, but you kind of get the sense of the beats that they have to hit throughout the season, and they are hitting those beats. And I think a lot of what happened in this episode was very inevitable, but that doesn't mean that it wasn't exciting. And there were some really, really cool, like Dioza, the character Dioza is like one of my absolute favorite TV characters. She is amazing. And she was so amazing in this episode. I could not like deal with it. It was so cool. I've only seen the episode once. I haven't written my review yet, so I'm still kind of processing it all. I love, love, love Indra. This is Indra's season in so many ways, and I really, really, really appreciate what we've gotten of her so far. So much drama on The 100, and I really hope that you guys are all watching and reacting along with me. So that brings us to the end of TV Show of the Week, and we are moving on to listener feedback. We have just a couple of tweets, and then we have four emails, actually. Two of them are Shadowhunters themed, so that's really fun. I guess you guys kind of, you turned up for this, which was awesome. But we will do the tweets first, if you want to get the first one from Laura.
Yes, Laura says, for the first time ever, I got to see a Marvel movie on opening weekend, and Ant-Man was just a fun movie, and I totally called the after credit scene. I can't wait to hear your thoughts. Also, if you have not checked out the Warcross series by Marie Lu, the final book in this two-part series comes out this fall, and if you love video games and the book Ready Player One, I highly recommend this book series as an amazing world-building book. There's diversity and a super compelling mystery. That sounds really fun. I've heard of this author before, but I've never read any of her books.
Yeah, Warcross. That sounds great. Okay, and Shelley says, it's interesting to see how excited people are about A Discovery of Witches when everything I've heard is that it features a terrible, unbalanced, unhealthy relationship. I'm linking a review by a good friend of mine if you're interested. So I went and read this review over on Goodreads, and it really is a damning review. Like, this is, according to the reviewer, A Discovery of Witches is basically about like this werewolf and vampire that fall in love, or witch and vampire, I think, that fall in love with each other. And it's like it basically sounds like Twilight on steroids. Like, he is physically controlling and demanding and rips everything away. Like, it's kind of a little bit like Christian Grey-ish without the grey part, which does not sound very appealing, I will agree. But I haven't read it, so this is just one review who's scathing opinion. I guess people are excited that have read it, which means that there's, with anything, there's always more than one interpretation. And I would certainly be curious to hear from someone who has read the book and maybe liked it, so we can get some balance there. But yeah, that review was definitely not a fan who wrote that review. So maybe the adaptation will be way different, though. Like, maybe the source material provides a springboard for something else. You know, I feel like kind of like the Vampire Diaries books, like, they were very different than the show ended up being. So you never know, you know, if the show will follow the same pattern.
Chanel says, OMG, hypes today show is giving me so many feels. This Harry Potter world recap brings me right back to my trip. Also, Selena, I cried too. She says she's in Orlando, and then also continues, we bought all the things, and my favorite ride was the Hogwarts experience.
Oh my God, the Hogwarts experience is my favorite ride of anything that I've ever tried in my life. Like, oh,
this
my
is the Forbidden Journey, so right?
Yeah, inside
it's
Hogwarts.
So
yeah.
Good.
And she sent us some pictures as
well.
Oh
my God, I'm going to have to sign into our Twitter account and check this out.
It was so cool. I really want to go to Orlando. It looks so good.
I would go with you. We should meet there.
Yes. Yeah, we should.
Because I haven't been to Diagon Alley yet.
Oh my God. Well, there you go.
Yeah.
I haven't either. Okay, so we have four emails. And the first one is from Allison L. She says, firstly, Selena, I'm so happy to hear how much you love Shadowhunters. It was actually a show I was going to recommend to you both. I feel that the show has done such an amazing job with its characters and exploring all their different relationships. Sometimes it reminds me of The 100 in the way that each character has a very unique and special relationship with each other. I really think it's a testament to the cast having amazing chemistry with each other, making every relationship feel really authentic and grounded. Magnus Bane is one of my favorite literary characters, and Harry Shum has been absolutely incredible in portraying him. I would love to hear your thoughts once you finish 3A. On a second thought, I'm catching up on the bonus segments and finished the one about fan campaigning, which is relevant again because of Shadowhunter's cancellation. The cancellation was really shocking because they were just getting ready to announce season 4. In the month that the show has been cancelled, it's had something like 10 million Save Shadowhunters tweets, raised $20,000 for the Trevor Project, and a billboard in Times Square. It's been such an impactful show to such a large and diverse group of people that I find it really hard to imagine that it would not be able to be picked up for a fourth season somewhere. I've got my fingers crossed that it does. Allison L. I have to. There's hope. There's hope, Allison. I'm so glad that I'm like here for the hunt, even if it's the final one. It's such a, oh my God, this fandom is so impressive, and the show is doing so many great things. I'm really sad that I didn't discover it sooner.
We also have a Shadowhunters email from Georgina, who writes, hi girls from Australia, after listening to this week's last week's episode, and she's referring to episode 191. She says, I have to join in on Selena's love for Shadowhunters, the TV show. I have loved the books for years now, and even though I still like them more, I have really enjoyed the TV show. Malek is my OTP. Is that how
oh
you
God,
pronounce it?
Malek.
My bad. Can you tell? Like, I have not gotten to this point yet. Malek is my OTP, and I'm also not a big fan of the Clary Jace relationship. I also hope that the show will continue on because there's so many characters that I need to see on the screen. I also don't mind the Mortal Instruments movie. It very much gets the feel of the book better than the TV show, but the plot really goes off the rails in such a way that I understand why Cassandra Clare was reluctant to give over the rights for a TV show. Just to clear up the books for Pam, there are 5 so far book series and 3 anthologies that come under the Shadowhunters Chronicles. So number 1 is the Mortal Instruments. Number 2 is the Infernal Devices prequel trilogy set in the 1800s. Then comes Dark Artifices, I think. And this is a sequel trilogy to Mortal Instruments, but with different main characters. Number 4 is The Last Hours, which is yet to be released, sequel trilogy to Infernal Devices. And number 5 is The Elvis Curses. Do you see why I was so confused when I was talking about this yesterday? Number 5 is The Elvis Curses, which is also yet to be released trilogy set during and in between The Mortal Instruments and The Dark Artifices and a planned future trilogy, The Wicked Powers. We're not done yet, folks. There's also the Bane Chronicles. Awesome if you love Magnus and Malik. Yay. Tales from the Shadowhunter Academy, set after the Mortal Instruments, and it's Simon-centric. I liked Simon in the books and in the movies, and also in what I saw of the TV show. So maybe this is the one for me. And then there's Ghosts of the Shadow Market, which are individual stories currently being released one per month. The Shadowhunters Chronicles are my favorite book series, tied with Harry Potter, and I highly recommend them for future readings. The books get better, so don't be discouraged if you find it hard to get through City of Bones, which is the first Mortal Instruments book. Mm-hmm. I hope this email isn't too long. Keep hyping. Georgina, thank you so much for sending us this list, because my best friend is like obsessed with this series also, but she is, I think the one that she really loves is Infernal Devices. And so I always get them confused, because she just like, you know, anytime like you're obsessed with something and you're just like, okay, I know you don't understand, but I just need to talk about this one thing with you because you're my best friend, so you're forced to listen to me. So she's always talking about these offshoots, but I don't ever know like what order they come in or how they fit into like the one movie I've seen. So I really appreciate this list from a Mortal Instruments novice. And hopefully anybody that's listening that doesn't know is appreciating it too, because I think it's great.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'm curious about checking out the books, because I, you know, once you get into a world, you like, you want more of that world, and it might be too jarring to jump into what for me won't be the quote unquote real version of the story, which sounds awful, but you guys know what I mean. But then again, I mean, I struggled with the first one, His Dark Material. No, wait, that's the wrong one. City of Bones, when I tried to read it. But now that I'm sort of more invested, I might actually be able to power through it and get to the good stuff. So I'll let you guys know. We have an email from Meg who says, "Hi, girls. First, I just want to say that I totally agree with Pam's assessment of Jane's story and character development in the new season of The Bold Type. Her failure at Insight made complete sense, and I was relieved when Jacqueline didn't just give her her job back. I would never dream of doing something like that, so I was glad it blew up in her face. My main reason for this email is that now I'm no longer in school. I was able to read and reread the second and third books in the Crazy Rich Asians trilogy, and I absolutely love them. They're absolutely fantastic summer beach reads. My reread of all three took less than a week, but clearly have roots in Jane Austen's novels. The books are Emma-esque mysteries, and I cannot wait for the movie to come out. Is Selena needs another reason to read the books before the movie comes out? Harry Shum Jr. is playing half of my OTP from the books. Love, Meg." She's right. That is a good reason. P.S. You don't have to include this, but if J.K. Rowling rewriting the World Cup chapter of Goblet of Fire 14 times was something... But J.K. Rowling rewriting the World Cup chapter of Goblet of Fire 14 times was something she first said in an interview about 15 years ago, which is why I think no one first covered it when she said it again recently. That makes sense. I did not remember that 15 years ago. I will fully admit that, but thank you for letting us know. That is good. I'm looking for beach reads, so mm-hmm. That's good to know.
Do you know what my favorite beach read is that I just reread?
What is it?
It's The Royal We.
Oh my God, I just bought that in LA.
I love
it. I'm so excited to read it.
Yeah, it's like literally like William and Kate, but not William and Kate. And it's so well done and it's so good. I really enjoyed it.
You know why I picked it up at a used bookstore in Santa Monica when I was there. And I picked it up for two reasons. First of all, because the name kind of rang a bell. I was like, I'm pretty sure maybe it's you, maybe it's someone else. It was like, I love this book. So I was like, okay, maybe it sounds fun. And then I read the back and I was like, is this the Student Prince book?
Amazing.
Yes. I legitimately had a moment when I was like, oh my God, is this the adaptation that she was working on? But I guess it probably is not. But I bought it just in case. I'm excited to read it.
Well, I think it's really cute, and it's really well done.
Yeah, that and Crazy Rich Asians are books that should be on my list when I finish Tower of Dawn. Sarah J. Maas is the one I'm working on right now. Then I might need something more light, so I can pick up one of those. Oh, we have one more email. So many emails.
Yes,
great.
I love it. We haven't had emails in a while. It's really great to hear from you guys in long form. So keep sending in your thoughts. This one's from Hannah, who says, "Hi, Pam and Selena. I've written a couple of times before, always with book recommendations. It is my job after all, but this time I wanted to share my movie and TV experience. I haven't finished this week's episode yet, so I'm not sure if you've already discussed this, but I went to see Won't You Be My Neighbor." Oh my God, Hannah, this is so timely. Oh. I just gave my review of this. Anyway, she continues, "Over the weekend, I went to see Won't You Be My Neighbor, the movie about Mr. Rogers, and oh my goodness, it's so emotional, so fabulous, so incredibly heartwarming, I can't stand it. I was that person sobbing in the theater, although I'm pretty sure I wasn't the only one. If you or anyone else on this earth hasn't seen it yet, I highly recommend. And second, my husband and I followed up Won't You Be My Neighbor with our first viewing of the Queer Eye series. This one I know you've talked about a lot, so I just wanted to throw my voice into the mix and say how fantastic it is. They're all so loving and supportive of each other and everyone. It's just the ultimate feel-good show. We are now almost done with the whole series. Also, I'm not sure watching a bunch of Queer Eyes for the first time on the same day as the Mr. Rogers movie was a good decision or not. Let's just say there were a lot of tears all the way around that day. Finally, since I'm me, I can't finish a conversation without a book rec. I'm throwing out there Fury Born by Claire Legrand, a fabulous ultra-feminist YA fantasy, and Where the Watermelons Grow, the sweetest and strongest middle grade I've read in a while. There are also a ton of phenomenal books coming out this fall, including the new Marcus Zusak, a new Kate DiCamillo, and Muse of Nightmares, the sequel to Strange the Dreamers. So get your TBR list ready. Thank you and keep up the great show."
Cool. Yeah. Awesome. Those are really great emails and recommendations for you all, especially during the summertime. It's so great to get so many ideas for books and shows and movies and music and all that stuff. So we really appreciate those. So thank you to everyone who sent in emails. And if you are listening and you would like to send in an email or a tweet, you can email us hype@hypeable.com, and you can tweet us @hypeablehype. We really look forward to hearing from you. Next week, we are not totally sure what's going to happen because I will be traveling and Pam will be traveling and we'll be at Comic-Con, and we will definitely record something at Comic-Con, but we need to figure out what and when and how much, etc. So we will definitely keep you guys informed about all of that. But we're really excited about everything that's going to be going on, and we're going to try to do some hype stuff, like I said, when we're there. And we also really appreciate if you would consider subscribing to us on Patreon for $2 a month, and you get videos, you get a weekly bonus segment, and you get access to giveaways like the one we mentioned at the top of the show, and more cool stuff that will be coming down the pipeline. And this week's bonus topic is going to be our review of Ant-Man and the Wasp. Until next week, have a wonderful week, or until next time, I guess, and we will be speaking to you soon. My name is Lena.
My name is Pamela. Oh, wait, this is the wrong show. And my name is Pamela.
But it's fine.
I was waiting for a third person to pop up.
And my name is Lena. No, this is not millennial. Sorry. Like fancy show with three hosts.
My bad.
Yeah, it's just us. Your name is Pamela, and your name is Pamela.
And my name and is Pamela.
That's what you should have done. Okay, that's the end. I guess we're done.